Alex Mitchell, Thomas Pynchon, Vineland, pages 214 through 217. She gave him the little girl photo floods, 4,800 degrees of daylight blue, and whispered, "It's why you kill each other, isn't it?" "Who?" "Men, because you can't love each other." He shook his head slowly. "Missed the point again. You never get beyond that hippie shit, do you?" "Point I didn't miss," she finished the thought, "is you prefer to do it by forcing things into each other's bodies. I hope that's a mischievous look. Don't get many of them, do you?" "It's Atman who's been putting you on this trip. You're getting too old to be such a smartass on your own." She smiled and raised her glass. "You got it. Just the medium. Goes in these four holes, comes out this one. Hey, and let's not forget nostrils, huh?" They lounged around the room, on and off the waterbed, becoming more grapey than drunk, and Brock just wouldn't give the weed situation a rest. Outside, beyond the dense rubberized drapes, now a solid black rectangle rimlit with a least glimmer of failed daylight, was the storm, the event. Just when she thought they were nestled safe in the center of America, here were sounds in the air they couldn't have imagined. Roars too deep for any Air Force jets from Tinker, some non-liquid clattering on the roof that could only be insects of a plague. Frenesi went to the window and pulled enough of one drape aside to have a look. At the sight of the black rolling clouds, she caught her breath. She'd never seen a sky like this on Earth, not even with the help of LSD. With no warning, everything would pulse hugely with light, and the undersides and edges of the great clouds would be hit with electric blue, and now and then, all creviced in black, a terrible final red. In the last light out the window, near enough to see, a funnel cloud, its tip not yet touching the earth, swung slowly, deliberating, as if selecting a target below. She pulled the drapes open to allow a sword shape of outside patio light, which had just come on, to fall across the bed, where Brock lay with his forearm over his eyes and his socks on. "You can figure it out, can't you?" he cried over the boom deaf drone outside. "You have a smart-ass angle on everything else. Why can't you see this one? Your boyfriend is in the way. In our way." Just quiet enough to register as deferent, sincere. "Real easy, then. Just take me off the case. Chances are he won't even notice. Anyone can deliver me his body," called Brock Vond across the room. "If that was all I wanted, you'd have been off it long ago." "There," as her mother used to sing, he said it again. "Remember handing me all that shit in your office till I agreed to send in a written report? You said then there wouldn't be anything more." "But you're right there literally in bed with him. Perfect placement. He's the key to it all, the key log. Pull him and you break up the structure, and the logs would disengage, singly and in groups, and continue on their way down the river to the sawmill, to get sawed into lumber, to be built into more America." Weed was the only one innocent enough, without hidden plans, with no ambitions beyond surmounting what the day brought each time around. He just went lurching on happily into his new identity as a man of action, embracing it as only an abstract thinker would, with the heedless enthusiasm of some junior doper discovering a new psychedelic, enjoying the unqualified trust of all who came inside his radius. With him gone, and the others scrambling apart after the greenbacks in Brock's safe, PR Cube would fall apart. "Never thought you'd try to hustle me like this, Brock." "I didn't think you'd ever get into it with Atman either," his voice just for the moment stressless, unprotected. "Plans change, I guess." She understood as clearly as she could allow herself to what Brock wanted her to do. Understood at last, dismally, that she might even do it. Not for him, unhappy fucker, but because she had lost just too much control. Time was rushing all around her. These were rapids, and as far as she could see it looked like Brock's stretch of the river. Another stage, like sex, children, surgery, further into adulthood perilous and real, into the secret that life is soldiering, that soldiering includes death, that those soldiered for, not yet and often never in on the secret, are always, at every age, children. She came and lay next to him, but not touching. The storm held the city down like prey, trying repeatedly to sting it into paralysis. She lay on one elbow, unable to stop gazing at Brock, pretending to herself that it made some difference to him whether or not she and Weed were fucking. Just as she had to pretend that Brock was not really what he looked like to everybody else, namely, the worst kind of self-obsessed collegiate dickhead, projected on into an adult format. But that someplace, lost, stupefied, needing her intercession, was the real Brock, the endearing adolescent who would allow her to lead him stumbling out into the light she imagined as sun plus sky, with an 85 filter in, returning him to the man he should have grown into. It could have been about the only way she knew to use the word love anymore. Its trivializing in those days already well begun, its magic fading, the subject of all that rock and roll, the simple resource we once thought would save us. Yet if there was anything left to believe, she must have in the power even of that weightless, daylit commodity of the 60s to redeem even Brock, amiably, stupidly, brutal, fascist Brock. At some point he must have gone drifting off to sleep, and she hadn't noticed. She watched over him, hers for a while, allowing herself to shudder with, even surrender to, her need for his bodily presence, his beauty, the fear at the base of her spine, the prurient ache in her hands. At last, so swept and helpless, she leaned in to whisper to him her heart's overflow, and saw in the half-light that what she thought were closed eyelids had been open all the time. He'd been watching her. She let out a short, jolted scream. Brock started laughing.